Mann.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
Please join us in the flag salute. And I'd like to ask Captain Craig Angelo to lead the flag salute tonight.
Ready? Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number three is public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all comments and communications. However, the board cannot act on items that are not on the agenda tonight. Would anyone like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none. Moving to item number four, board member items for discussion. We'll start with Pamela.
I have done.
No, Bill?
Nope.
Fern?
No, I have nothing.
Barbara?
Nothing at this time.
I have nothing at this time either. Number 5A is review and approval of the minutes of March 12th. Comment or questions from the board on the minutes? Comment or corrections? Okay. Is there a comment or questions from the public on the minutes? Again, hearing none.
I move that we accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes of February 27th as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
Excuse me, I believe it was March 12th. You said February 27th.
I apologize, it is March 12th. Thank you. Thanks for the correction. Okay, item number six, fire items. Tonight we have a presentation for Captain Craig Angelo, and I have here the captain's badge. And Craig, if you'll come up. Item number seven, then, is utility items. 7A, cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines. This is normally a routine item on the agenda, but tonight we have a presentation from Doug Grossart, who will give us the status on the repair and reconstruction work that is in process on this item. Doug, welcome.
Thank you. I have some handouts.
Thank you. Thank you.
As you stated, my name is Doug Grossart. I work with Wallace Group, and we're the district engineers, obviously, for your district. I wanted to thank you for having me. Patrick and I have discussed at length, along with Phil, the status of this project, and we thought it would be a good idea to update the board and the public regarding the status and where we've been and where we're going on it. What I've provided you with here is just kind of a picture's worth a thousand words sort of thing. To give you a little bit of a history on this, I'm sure you all know much more than I, but Gary and Taylor was previously, they were the district engineers, and they began this project to repair damage to the sewer caused by the earthquake back in 2004, to be funded impacting certain wetland areas or certain Army Corps waters of the U.S. jurisdictions. That would be best. So in doing that, my initial take on the project was to not reinvent the wheel and to not redo anything that Gehring had done. But with the questions from the agencies, they were asking if we could eliminate anything. So I specifically looked at a few areas to limit impact. And we found that a couple of segments could be removed altogether. So that made me think, okay, well, let's take another look at the entire scope of the project. So what I've provided you with, the first page, Gary Taylor initially established 29 segments to be addressed, and they would be carried taken care of in order of a priority established by Gary Taylor until the grant funding ran out. So they had 29 segments. Their estimates were looking at maybe 13 of them could be repaired. That's the first page showing either open trench construction or lining. That is in which an epoxy coated liner could be blown in or filled in with hot water into an existing line, allowed to cure with heat, and it's cured in place, and then you basically have fixed your cracks inside of there. It lessens the impact. You don't need to tear up streets, things like that. It can be a little more expensive, and you don't have a brand new pipe. You have a lined pipe. But sometimes that's the best option. What we did is I reviewed all of the video for those and found that this is the second sheet. This is the findings of my review. Some of the segments I agreed totally with what Gary Taylor found. Some of the segments I thought it would be more cost effective to the district to perform spot repairs rather than complete replacement. There were, for example, there were a couple of segments 200-300 feet long, and they had two offset joints in them where you could go in and pothole for those two offset joints, repair them, and your line is fine, and you only have two spot repairs rather than replacing 300 feet of pipe. So we're currently performing a cost estimate for our proposed scope. If you look at at the blue lines, these were segments that repair them. I did speak with Malcolm McEwen, who used to work for Gary Taylor, now works for Boyle Engineers. He did the initial assessment on this, and we discussed some of these segments. I didn't want to just gloss over them and remove them from the scope out of hand just because I deemed it so. So I wanted to discuss with him, and he and I concurred on those segments. So what you have now is the segment two, or page two, details our current scope, and page three gives you a little more of an in-depth discussion. Phil and Patrick and I met for a couple of hours, and I don't want to take up all your time tonight, but I thought this would be a good update for your review, and just to keep the map as I should present in the future. It's a good go-by, give you an idea of the scope of the project and where we're going. Currently, we're in the permitting and design process. We're dealing with Army Corps of Engineers and the county. And through the county, we're dealing with the Coastal Commission, and we'll deal with the Fish and Game. There's very, very little impact for Army Corps of Engineers and for Fish and Game. There's a few segments that impact Coastal Commission, and then we'll deal with the county directly for encroachment permits that are within the county's roads. The county's been extremely helpful in organizing all this and helping us with the grants. And as far as the grants do expire, the funding will expire next April, and we're on track to have construction completed prior to that. The county, in conjunction with Wallace Group, are really working to push this through as best we can on the permitting process. Sometimes they can be lengthy, and that's why we've changed some of the scope to avoid some of the more lengthy agency reviews, such as Army Corps of Engineers and Coastal Commission. The less you can impact, the better it'll be for you in terms of time, the better it'll be for those agencies in terms of impact. That being said, I also just kind of summarized on the last page, the 8.5 by 11, I summarized the differences between the scopes. So if you were aware of what the scope was prior, this will just give you the brief overview, the highlights of what's been changed. And with that, I will answer any questions, hopefully, that you may have.
These lines were put in the mid-60s?
I believe 63, 64. You know, where we found most of the damage, there's very few cracks. I believe some of the stuff that was real emergency repairs were already completed. And this is going and getting kind of your more subtle things that need to be repaired. But what we've found on a lot of your, it's called an offset joint. You'll have a segment of pipe, and then where the two pipes come together, if they become offset, it's called an offset joint. And it can lead to leaking of groundwater into the line called infiltration, or possibly of sewer out of the line called exfiltration. But what we've really run into in this is it seems like anytime there's a lateral, the laterals were settling more than the main line was settling. So when you have a lateral, there was possibly a little offset of an inch or so. And it's from an overall operational standpoint, from a limiting of groundwater infiltration, that will just help the wastewater treatment plant operate more efficiently. If you have a lot of infiltration and inflow in periods of high rainfall, you're going to get the plant overloaded, and that's never a good idea. Yeah. Some of the other issues that we have addressed are dips in the line. That'll happen even without an earthquake, but with some of the liquefaction that I've heard happen here, the line could settle, differential settlement, so you'll get, it's supposed to be just downhill, and you'll get a belly in there. And what'll happen with that is water will sit, water and sewage will sit, it'll be a slow spot, sewage can settle out, you can maybe get grease build up, and you could potentially have a backup to where the line would back up, and it would be a plug. That's actually our main concern, and why we why one of the segments, segment one, it's down on Juanita. It's not a very long segment, but the manhole's right next to the lagoon, and there's a dip there. So that's why it's priority. It's the first segment we want to take care of, because with that dip, we could have the potential for a blockage, and if it were to back up, it would go right into the lagoon. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the first one that we take care of.
How deep are these, especially like Juanita? Are they?
That line is real shallow.
Real shallow.
Yeah, it's about 2.5 feet of cover to the top of the pipe.
Oh, yeah, because as I say, that's high groundwater. That's
right. And there are other areas, for example, on the it's on the lakeside there between Juanita and McCarthy, segment 8. Get a heck of a lot of benefit out of it. You will slicken up the pipe a little bit. It's when you get an old clay pipe or other materials, they will get rough over time, and you put this new line in there, it is slicker and it will flow a little better, but it's not going to help a dip a heck of a lot. So we're proposing to actually open trench that, and some dewatering will definitely need to be done.
This is along Lakeside?
Correct.
Okay, is that the green line or the blue line?
I'm sorry, it is it's the green line, but there are two little red spots on it.
Uh-huh.
Those are spot repairs. I'm talking about Aloha. I was looking at the wrong line. Okay. Aloha, it's segment 5, down by the plant. On Lakeside, those are two spots of actually severe infiltration is all we really need to fix there. But on Aloha, segment 5, that's where the dip is. And you've got some serious groundwater going in there as well. So dewatering will be part of the design, the specs for the project. On segment one on Juanita, there's also a water line that currently runs right next to the sewer line, making it, you've got a house, then a sewer line, and then a water line, all within about 6 feet. And we're going to, the water line that's in there is asbestos cement pipe, transite pipe. It's brittle, as Phil could attest to. So when we go in there to replace the sewer line, it's going to be real tough to keep that water line intact. And since it is, since they cross, the water line crosses under the sewer line, it's 2 feet from the sewer line. Those are all issues that we'll want to bring up to more modern standards. So we have been able to, with special construction, class 200 piping, things like that, we'll be able to bring that up to current standards. So, and we're trying to get, as I mentioned in the spreadsheet on sheet three, we're working with the county to possibly get that water line repair covered under the grant funding as well. Because we wouldn't need to repair that water line if it weren't for the repair of the sewer line. And Morgan Terrell at the county seemed pretty open to getting us some funding for that as well.
Very good.
So what kind of material are you putting?
One thing that I'd like to point out, and this is not to divert your attention, but I just remembered it, is under Gehring's, on page three on the spreadsheet, under Gehring's original scope, they had over 7,300 feet of piping to be repaired or replaced. And with the revised scope, this is worst case, assuming that the video that we need to do yields that we need to completely replace everything, that we're looking at 4,100 feet of pipe. So we, under the, if you compare apples to apples and you've got the same per foot price, mm-hmm. cost-wise, we could conceivably complete most, if not all, of the 29 segments, whereas with the previous scope, it was about 13 was kind of what they were mm-hmm. shooting for. So to get back to your question, it depends on how much we can afford to do, how many segments, that's how long it will take. But it shouldn't. The construction portion will be one of the quicker portions of this project. The permitting is something that we're working and we're going to ramrod through as best we can. And I would say it depends on how much it rains would be part of the duration of the construction. But if need be, we'll go right up until the date. But we will. We have enough time, definitely, to get it done.
To get it
permitted and get it done, construction-wise.
Well, that's good news about the segments, that we might be able to fix everything that needs to be fixed. That was always an outstanding question. We're
right.
thinking, 29 segments, and we can only fix 13 of
right.
them, and here we are leaving all of this undone work out there. So,
and even these 29 are, it's not bad. Just to allay some of your fears, the system actually looks a lot better than I thought it was going to.
Good.
So there are areas that definitely need to be addressed, but for the most part, you've got little spots here and there to fix up, but it looks good. I was pleasantly surprised.
That's
another
good to hear.
Another issue that we're trying to in revising the scope that will help to shorten the time frame would be segment 14, which is down in your lower right. Segment 27, which is kind of in the middle right, and segment 28, which is up on Pier at Highway 1. Segments 14 and 27 deal with the railroad. And we're trying to limit that scope as much as we can, which would limit the deal with Caltrans. And that just takes longer.
They're nice people.
Yes, they're very nice.
This is primarily the west side of Oceano.
Correct.
How's the east side?
Actually, there are some areas to be addressed, and what I will do is in the interest of getting this project completed, we had to kind of deal with the 29 here. If there are any emergencies, I am, as time permits, I'm reviewing the rest of the district. It, for the most part, the system as a whole looks very good. But there are areas to address on the east side of Highway 1 as well. I believe, and I can't say I can't speak for anybody else, but I believe the reason why they concentrated on this area is because that's where most of the liquefaction issues, most of the earthquake damage. I know Norswing, there was quite a bit of differential settlement there where the road and the manholes were up in the air and utility poles went straight down. So I believe that's why they concentrated on this area. From an earthquake damage standpoint, there's not a heck of a lot in addition over on the east side. Mm-hmm. There are some areas that you could say, I guess, that they were earthquake damage. You could definitely, it could warrant some repair due to that. But your bigger portion of the damage due to settlement would be on this side. I propose to present at a later date kind of an overall, and I could just do it paper-wise for your review, areas that I think are of concern that should be addressed. And you could, most of these, if they are an emergency, I would definitely let you know, and Phil probably already knows about them, you know, and has already fixed them. But it could be something that you could budget out over time and give you a kind of a laundry list, a honeydew, if you will, to knock it out over time and say, as part of your capital improvements budget or as far as your maintenance budget, it all depends on where you can fit it, but you might want to split it out. I'll have that for you, though.
Mm-hmm. Had you looked at Beach Street? Because we had people complain when the cleaning went on that water came spouting out of their toilets.
Okay, I'll note that. Oh, the water came spouting out of their toilets?
Yes.
Yeah, they probably just went. With the line.
Okay.
But yeah, that happens. And sometimes laterals are put in flipped, and where even if you're going the right direction, it'll shoot up the toilet. You just hope nobody's, you know, using the restroom at that time or they get a little bit soaked.
Yeah, I think that it quite surprised them.
Yes.
It happened for several people there.
We've done that in Avila. There's one particular lateral in Avila Beach that is backwards. And it does that every time. So you just let them know. But I can, do you know the portion? Is it just several houses on Beach? Or?
It's near 22nd, 23rd
okay.
In the Beach area, yeah.
Wait, are there comments or questions from the board?
I have none.
Are there comments or questions from the public on this item? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Hearing none. Thank you. We appreciate that. This has been on our agenda for quite some time, as you might imagine, and it's people that have been following it here, no update for a long time, so it's good to have some additional information.
Well, great. Well, I'll make them a little more frequent. Whenever you want me to come back, I'll come talk your ear off. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, the recommended action then is to consider the need to continue the emergency action that the board declared following the San Simeon earthquake.
I move that we continue the emergency cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we continue the declaration of emergency following the San Simeon earthquake. Is there any public comment on that item? Hearing none, may I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, moving to item 7, B. We'd like to take 7B and C out of order such that 7B would be first. I'm sorry, 7C would be first.
And I'll recuse myself.
Pamela Dean and Greg Jenkins. Patrick?
Okay. District Council, Christina, so make this first.
Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public,
I'll present this matter. There's a couple of minor typo corrections and clarifications along the way. I'll point those out as we go, and a tiny bit of supplemental information to clarify as we go. At its March 12, 2008 meeting, report incorrectly says 2006, the board considered a claim submitted by Pamela Dean and Greg Jenkins, the claimants, on February 18, 2008. Again, the report incorrectly says 2006. The matter was continued to this date for further discussion and consideration. In reviewing this discussion, it must be kept separate from the discussion about the related claim filed by Ms. Dean, which involves related but separate issues. In summary, the claim contends that the district removed a water meter from the claimant's property located at 1935 Wilmar Avenue in Oceano, the property, that the district was not authorized to remove the meter, and that the cost to replace the meter on the property is $9,680.66. A copy of the claim is attached as Exhibit A to the report. The claimants further state that, quote, to continue using the water meter should only require a $30 application for service and a $30 reconnect fee, close quote. Our March 12th staff report stated that the meter in question was installed many years ago to service a motorhome, and that the service apparently has not been used for more than 20 years following the motorhome's removal. At the March 12th meeting, claimant Dean commented that the service actually was for a mobile home, and that the service had been used for irrigation purposes significantly more recently than 20 years ago. The mobile home versus motorhome correction apparently is well taken, but staff's recollection remains that the service has not been used for many years. The March 12th staff report noted that the claim was somewhat vague as to what the claimants are requesting. The claim states that the cost to replace this meter is $9,680.66, but fails to state whether it claims damages in that amount, or it is demanding the water connection charges should only be $60 total for the application and reconnect fees, or three, it is claiming damage in an amount equal to the difference between those two. The claim otherwise is in proper form on its face. The claim was presented on February 18, 2008 with a stated date of incident of October 20th from their property. In March 2003, district staff discovered that the meter was connected to a district water main by a polybutylene service line. Due to the well-known defective nature of polybutylene, it's been district practice to remove and replace polybutylene lines as soon as possible. There's no question that when the polybutylene line was removed, district staff made a judgment call to also remove the meter. The decision to remove the meter was based upon staff belief that the meter had not been used for many years, and a January 16, 1985 policy memorandum discussed in Section 3 of this memo. Two, claimants assert that there is no ordinance which would allow the removal of the water meter. It's somewhat difficult to determine the district ordinance operative in 2003 because multiple ordinances over the years have addressed the water system. Most of those ordinances explicitly or indirectly superseded multiple sections in prior ordinances. There's no question, however, that the district owned both the polybutylene line in question and the meter, or that it has the inherent right to maintain, repair, and replace its facilities, including water meters. The claimants pose the key question is whether those activities include meter removal under these circumstances. The answer to the question as posed by the claimants involves a factual and ordinance interpretation decision that can be explored. I suggest, however, that it is not the right question. The right question is whether that makes any difference. Third, the claimants assert that if the meter had not been removed, they would only have paid a $30 application for service fee and a $30 reconnect fee. I do not believe this assertion is correct and poses the determinative question. I believe the version of the staff report you have says, I do not believe this assertion is incorrect. I thought I had corrected that typographical error and sent a replacement page. The replacement page I sent was incorrect, or it didn't get to the staff report. But it should read, I do not believe that this assertion is correct, and it poses the determinative question. On or about January 16, 1985, then General Manager Richard Hill posted a memorandum to the district policy file specifying, quote, if a water meter has not been servicing a parcel, parenthesis, previously served, close parenthesis, within the last 5 years, and no user charges have been paid, then all connection fees will have to be paid. See Section 5-22 of the OCSD Administrative Procedures, close quote. I put on the memo and advised that the point was to incorporate the 5-year increasing charge table depending upon the time period that the connection had been out of service. Lacking any evidence to the contrary, it appears that the correct interpretation of GM Hill's memorandum is as described by UOS Davis. 4. Claimants assert that the general manager has no authority to establish policy as GM Hill did in his 1985 memorandum. I believe that the policy established by GM Hill was appropriate for the following reasons. It is not clear what set of rules of order were in effect in January 1985, but longstanding OCSD rules of order, paragraph 6.3 states, quote, "The primary responsibility of the board of directors is the formulation and evaluation of policy. Routine matters concerning the operational aspects of the district are to be delegated to professional staff members of the district," close quote. It also is not clear what set of personnel policies and procedures were in effect in 1985. But longstanding OCSD personnel policy and procedures paragraph 13.1 states, quote, "General manager's discretion. Any problem, situation, or procedure not covered in these policies, or any ambiguity or contradiction contained herein, shall be handled in a manner that, in the general manager's opinion, provides the best solution." We have opined that minor technical administrative procedures, which can, to an insignificant degree, modify ordinances or other administrative procedures, are within the contemplation of the ordinances and procedures, even though they are not specifically stated. In addition, policy implementation requires interpreting the policymaker's intent. The 1985 memorandum apparently has stood without challenge or modification by the board for more than 20 years. Functionally, this can be seen as an implicit adoption of the policy, even if it was outside GM Hill's direct authority. It therefore is our opinion that the January 16, 1985 policy memorandum is controlling regarding the issue, and the full reconnect fee should be charged regardless whether the district had authority to remove the meter in 2003. Determination of what is the correct full reconnection fee is addressed in the discussion of claimant Dean's separate claim. I do want to point out here, though, one matter that sort of factual matter that the board needs to determine. The policy memorandum makes reference to this 5-year amortization of the schedule. So there is a factual issue there that I'm not sure you're going to be able to resolve. I understand that Operations Supervisor Davis has done some investigation on it and is confident that it hasn't been used for many years, but there may be some additional investigation that's warranted. I'm not sure. Having said that, the California Tort Claims Act, Government Code Section 900 et sec, provides that a party with a claim against a public entity must file the claim within 6 months of the incident giving rise to the claim. The board is required to act on the claim within 45 days after presentation. And this 6 month of incident issue is somewhat important. I mentioned earlier that there may ultimately be a determination that Ms. Dean's claim is late. And that's that 6 month window issue. I'm not prejudging that. I'm not suggesting that it is late, but that's something that could be determined somewhere down the line. The board is required to act on the claim within 45 days after presentation. The board may, 1, reject the claim if the board finds the claim without merit, 2, allow the claim if the board finds the claim has merit and the amount demanded is reasonable, 3, reject it in part if the claim has merit but the amount demanded is unreasonable, 4, reject the claim or seek and agree to a compromise if the legal liability or the amount demanded is in dispute. In order to comply with the requirements of the Act, the board must make its decision and take action on the claim within 45 days after its submission. Therefore, the action must be taken on or before April 3rd, 2008. And again, parenthetically, the difference that occurs whether you act within the 45 days or don't act is the statute of limitations within which Ms. Dean and Mr. Jenkins could bring a civil suit against the district. By acting within the 45 days, you substantially shorten the statute of limitations within which they could bring a lawsuit against the district if that was their choice. If you don't act and the claim just is deemed rejected because of the passage of the 45 days, they have a substantially longer statute of limitations. Following action on the claim, the board must give written notice of its decision and the action taken. The notice must be in a form prescribed by the act. If the action is to deny the claim, then it also must advise the complainant. Based upon the foregoing analysis, we believe that the full reconnect fee is due.
Discusses subdivision development.
Right. That is correct. I was going to mention that in connection with the other claim. Those are both. Those really have to do with the other claim by Mrs. Dean. We can certainly discuss them now if you have questions, but in my view, they really have to do with the other claim.
Okay. Comment or questions on the staff report?
When was the last time a water bill was paid on this meter? Any idea? Do we know that?
I don't know.
And the billing was never in Ms. Dean or Mr. Jenkins' name?
No, not prior to the removal of the meter. That's correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other comment or questions from the board?
With that, have we as OCSD ever billed on that, or was it the previous water company on that?
No, OCSD billed on it for a short period of time.
But we don't know when that time was?
Well, about 20 years ago. But we don't know exactly. Our records don't go back that far, frankly.
I have a question. When you talked about you weren't sure if this was a late claim or not, how do you go about establishing that one way or the other?
Well, sometimes it's very clear that the claim is late, you know. The auto accident occurred 7 months before the claim was filed. In this case, it really hinges upon when the claimants first knew or should have known of the fact that the water meter had been removed. And for purposes of this claim discussion, I'm willing to accept Mrs. Dean's assertion that they first learned of it in October of last year. But if a lawsuit were to be filed and additional investigation in the form of depositions and maybe of other parties or other witnesses went forward, I have to accept the possibility that some other evidence might arise that would indicate that the claim was late.
Thank you.
And actually, these refer to existing service connections and discontinuance of service connections, and these were never followed. They do say that they talk about the application fee, and they talk about for discontinuance, a customer shall be entitled to a reasonable notice of the intent of the district to discontinue service for noncompliance or violation or whatever. That was never done.
The ordinance she's referring to is attached to the other claim.
It's on page 12.
I'm sorry, it's not a 12 page. It's only a 3-page ordinance.
I don't know yet.
Did you say what exhibit it was?
Article 3.
The report 7B.
I'm sorry?
Report, the report, yeah. For 7B,
uh-huh,
has attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Exhibit C, which is a March 24th, 2005 letter. It's a two-page letter.
Okay.
Following that, the district manager attached ordinance 1996-1 and 1987-1, both of which were cited by Ms. Dean at the last meeting.
And in 1996-1, Pamela, which paragraph did you want us to look at?
It looks like it's in a different ordinance, so that's a good thing.
The ordinance that was cited at the last meeting was 1996-1. That is what is attached to your staff report. It is a three-page ordinance. She is apparently referring to some other document that is not attached.
Yeah, I think what she's looking at is the rules and regulations, because it's talking about application for service.
725.
I seem to be the only one that will speak up.
Is AGP ready? Okay, we'll come back to order. And we've been given the pages in question.
Okay. And they're actually from OCSD Ordinance 2006-1.
And what number did you want us to look at, Ms. Dean?
Article 3, 1 and 2.
It's page 12.
I'm sorry?
It's page 12 of the ordinance.
Is everyone time to read that? I'm a monthly charge for water service on an existing active account. Presumably there would have been monthly bills to, I imagine, the prior property owner for some significant period of time prior to Ms. Dean purchasing the property. And if those bills were not paid, the rule provides that the service can be discontinued and, in fact, terminated with a termination process that probably was implemented before she purchased the property. And the meter may have been, apparently the meter was left in place after that happened. I'm looking at the
rules and regulations, and it appears that that's probably what happened, that the service was terminated, perhaps for non-payment. There was no bill of record. I don't believe Ms. Dean even knew that the water meter was there, I think, when you purchased the property or the service connection. So it seems to me that the, although it, you know, there may have been a meter there, there doesn't appear in my mind to be an active service connection there, or an active account, certainly. That's the difficulty that I have with this. And I think the staff report pretty well sums up the position.
Yeah, we have, staff has no record of any minimum payments or turn on or turn off. All that occurred prior to the records we have. And it could have been shut off for non-payment, or it could have just been disconnected when the motorhome left. That was my understanding of what happened, but one of those two things occurred, most likely.
Another issue is the longstanding rule against single services where water is not supplied independently of sewer. So that's another thing that makes this peculiar, that there was apparently a water meter with no sewer connection.
I don't think there was a motorhome sitting there for the last 15 years.
No.
By the board are all well taken, but Ms. Dean should be given her opportunity to speak, unless she's done, and I don't think she is.
I wasn't quite.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Please continue.
Yeah.
It looks like the board is relying on a 1985 memo, and that was something I could never find. I did have all the rules and regs, and a 1985 memo is what you're relying upon. I don't think anybody in the public would know that existed. I certainly didn't know it existed. I know that other water purveyors or companies or districts utilize a disconnect fee that will allow you to maintain your water service and then reconnect later, where you don't have to keep paying a monthly service fee. So they will allow a disconnect fee. I think that makes some good sense, because this was apparently in here and it was said to be legal for many, many years. I think if you're going to rely on a 1985 memo as an ordinance, that you better let the public know that if they don't use their water meter and their water service for 5 years, they're going to be liable for a $10,000 charge. I really don't think that's fair to the people in the community. They don't have any idea what's going on. It gets back to our ordinances, and where do you find them? A lot of them have been secret. I had no idea of a 1985 memo, and then we're referring back to it. I'm looking at a 2006 ordinance. 1987, things like that. Nobody can find anything in what we have here. It is a very difficult thing to do. So part of what I'm doing here is to heighten awareness and get something done. And part of it is because I feel it's kind of an unfair thing to do to me and any member of the community, to have to repay the whole $10,000 charge for a service connection when you've had it there and not be grandfathered in or have some way to deal with it. So that's my case, and on this one, I just wanted to let everybody know. Okay?
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, hearing the nation. You may have to dig to find them, but in my opinion, they're there. And so I think I'm going to have grave difficulty, not to say that your point isn't well taken, that ordinances and those things could be made more clear and hopefully more available so that people understand them as well as can be achieved. But dealing with what with this, the total of what's here and the rules and regulations and the memo, it seems to me that I'm going to have real trouble supporting that item. So I guess at this point, then, we need a motion to proceed.
I move that we accept staff's recommendation to reject Ms. Dean and Mr. Jenkins' claim.
I will. I'll second that. Although I'm, you know, I'm, I have a lot of sympathy for the claimant on this, but I can't quite make the connection to see where it is anything other than a required hookup fee, as much as I'd like to. So I'll second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the staff report and deny the claim. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Next item will be then out of order is item 7B. Dean claim, consideration and recommended rejection of claim for damages presented by Pamela Dean.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, this is the related item, and I'm sure you all understand this, but just for the record, I want to make sure that everybody understands that the vote on the prior claim does not necessarily predetermine this one. This is an independent decision that you make here. And again, there's a couple of little minor clarifications. Resulting from not being able to pay water service connection fees in March of 2005 on our three-lot subdivision located at 1935 Wilmar Avenue in Oceano, the property. She indicates that this amount represents the difference between the fees quoted her on March 18, 2005 and the fees as they currently exist. A copy of the claim is attached to the report as Exhibit A. While not specifically stating it in the claim, the claimant has stated in previous documentation that she should have been given the option to install all connections and meters for her proposed building project on the property when processing the parcel map with the county. The claimant also previously has alleged that she was not allowed service connections to her property line without a building permit, and that a special deal was worked out where all service connections would be installed, with the payment of water service connection fees delayed until building permits were obtained for individual lots. Claimant contends this is contrary to district policy. The March 12th staff report noted that the claim is somewhat vague as to what the claimant is requesting. While the claim does not specifically demand any form of payment or action, it's fairly clear that her intent is to make claim against OCSD for $9,933.96. The claim otherwise is in proper form on its face. The claim was presented on February 18th, 2008, with a stated date of incident of October 22, 2007. This falls within the six-month statutory requirement, but it should be noted that further investigation may determine that the incident date actually was earlier, resulting in the late claim. The staff report also says it is possible that the claim is premature as the claimant apparently has not paid the disputed fees yet. That is incorrect. She has paid the disputed fees, and she is substantively asking for a refund. Based upon comments made at the March 12th meeting and review of material from past staff and board review of this matter, we believe that the claim is without merit. One, claimant asserts that a special deal was made with other developers. I do not know if any special arrangements were made with any other developers in the community with projects pending. If such is the case, perhaps it merits some further investigation. It does not, however, determine how this matter should be addressed. Assuming arguendo that such an arrangement was made,
unless a longstanding pattern of conduct is shown or board ratification such as to make the practice an adopted policy as demonstrated, the special deal might be wrong or actionable, but it does not give support to the proposition that some other person should be given the same arrangement, especially if the division at a time when the subdivision was to proceed imminently and a fee increase was pending. Factually distinct. Two, the March 18, 2005 fee letters were known to be estimates only, and the claimant agreed to a fee payment deferral arrangement. There are two March 18, 2005 fee letters, and copies of both are attached as Exhibit B. There's one for each of two lots. They each recite that it is presented as, quote, an estimate of the water and sewer fees for connection of the subject property, close quote. And in your staff report, I underlined and bolded estimate. That's my emphasis added to call it to your attention. They also state that, quote, OCSD will require that you submit a copy of your building permit and receipt from the SSLOCSD before it will accept water and sewer fees due us. And again, in your staff report, all of that, quote, is bolded, and that is the way it was in the original of the document. This is the same form letter that is given to every new connection applicant. The point is that the claimant was treated the same as everyone else and was on notice that the fees listed were only an estimate pending further review and meeting of the stated requirements. While the parcel map subdivision process usually involves construction of appropriate infrastructure improvements to serve the lots, it is a separate and different process from obtaining building permits to construct on-site improvements such as a home. The two processes can occur concurrently or separately. In the claimant's case, she apparently chose to defer the on-site improvement process. While a pending parcel or subdivision map certainly can give the district some indication of what improvement ultimately will occur on the subject property, it is impossible to precisely and reliably know what will occur until a building permit has issued. It is for that reason that the district staff generally requires the building permits in hand before fees are accepted. The claimant's project shows precisely how these two processes can work both separately and together. In a letter dated March 24, 2005, a copy of which is attached as Exhibit C, the claimant requested special consideration for her project. The reason was that the claimant was then currently constructing a unit under a permit as a secondary unit to the existing dwelling. It resided on one of the newly created lots, and at completion was to have its own meter and water service. The county would comply with the normal requirements for building permits before OCSD proceeds with its work would necessitate tearing up off-site improvements one or more times when she was ready to proceed with development on the other new lots. For the claimant's benefit, and at her request, an arrangement was worked out that OCSD would install the three water and sewer laterals to the property line required, and, quote, connection fees are to be deferred until water meters connecting to each new building are needed, close quote. It was anticipated that the secondary unit under construction would be finished relatively soon and the meter for it would be set and the fees for it paid. Quote, water connection charges will be assessed as the meters for lot 2 and 3 are installed and connected at a later date when building permits are issued for these lots, close quote. This was the request that came from the claimant. It's fairly evident that the claimant knew at the time that the fee estimates were simply that, estimates, and that a special arrangement to accommodate the client was worked out at her request. And it's also noteworthy that this was done by the general manager using that same sort of discretion that we've talked about in other areas, as opposed to bringing it to the board for some sort of formal approval. Three, claimant asserts that district staff had no authority to require building permits before fees are collected. I believe this assertion is incorrect. In past discussions with the claimant, she has pinned this assertion on District Rules and Regulations 2-20 dealing with subdivisions. It states in part as follows, quote, subdivisions. Prior to the granting of approval by the district for recording of a final subdivision map, or installing any part of a public service under jurisdiction of the district, the applicant shall have complied with Section 2-17 and Section 2-19 of this ordinance and all other applicable provisions, and to either pay all fees and meet all district requirements or pay all fees and post bonds guaranteeing construction of all improvements and meeting all district requirements, close quote. This poses several problems. A, it suggests that the district somehow has discretionary authority over a subdivision map. The district has none, and so in some respects, the section is a non sequitur. Now, that said, the district, this, again, diverting from the report just a little bit, the district does review the maps in order to assure fire safety and that the garbage trucks can get where they need to go and that sort of thing. But the district does not have direct approval over the map. B, it is a de minimis distinction, but it should be noted that the section speaks of subdivision maps, while the map in question in the claimant's case is a parcel map. There is a small... Given the ambiguity, the key issue is what authority does district staff have to resolve these types of matters? The longstanding OCSD Rules of Order, paragraph 6.3, in effect in 2005, states, the primary responsibility of the Board of Directors is the formation and evaluation of policy. Routine matters concerning the operational aspects of the district are to be delegated to professional staff members of the district. Close quote. Similarly, the longstanding OCSD Personnel Policy and Procedures, paragraph 13.1, in effect in 2005, states, quote, general manager's discretion. Any problem, situation, or procedure not covered in these policies or any ambiguity or contradiction contained herein shall be handled in a manner that, in the general manager's opinion, provides the best solution. Close quote. We have opined that minor technical administrative procedures which can, to an insignificant degree, modify ordinances or other administrative procedures are within the contemplation of ordinances and procedures even though they are not specifically stated. In addition, policy implementation requires interpreting the policymaker's intent. The policy of deferring fee collection until building permits apparently has stood without challenge or modification of the board for many years and generally serves the public well. In some sense, you can argue that the flexibility given to the administrative staff also benefited the claimant here, as it allowed her to work out the March 25, 2005 arrangement regarding the service to the secondary dwelling unit. Functionally, this can be seen as an implicit adoption of the policy, even if it was outside the direct authority of the general managers that have used it over the years. It is therefore our opinion that the general policy to defer fee payment until permits are in hand is not only authorized but prudent, and the special arrangements made in March 2005 for the claimant's benefit, constructing the laterals but deferring the claimant's fees, were as well. While the board may choose to give the claimant some relief due to the unusual circumstances that occurred here, I do not believe that the claim has merit. California Tort Claims Act procedures. Under the California Tort Claims Act, Government Code Section 900 et sec, a party with a claim against a public entity must file the claim within 6 months of the incident giving rise to the claim. The board is required to act on the claim within 45 days after presentation. The board may, one, reject the claim if the board finds the claim without merit, two, allow the claim if the board finds the claim has merit and the amount demanded is reasonable, three, reject in part if the claim has merit but the amount demanded is unreasonable. Based on the foregoing analysis, we believe the appropriate connection fee is as calculated by the district staff. And the recommended action is by motion, second, discussion, and vote, reject Ms. Dean's claim. There was an inappropriate reference to Mr. Jenkins. Subsequent to preparing this report and submitting it, the district manager attached copies of district ordinances 1996-1 and 1987-1. 1996-1 is the ordinance that Ms. Dean cited last time. We've since learned that what she was really referring to was 2006-1. I don't believe, I did not discuss at all ordinance number 1987-1 because I frankly don't think it applies to this situation, but certainly Mrs. Dean may have a different view of that. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Okay, are there comment or questions on the staff report?
It's an interesting statement. While the board may choose to give the claimant some relief due to the unusual circumstances that occurred here, you know, that just shows liability to me on our part.
Well, that's certainly a policy decision that this board can make. You know, I have seen this board and your predecessors on occasion when there was a little bit of gray area in a situation, and they felt that the member of the public had acted in good faith, even though they didn't have completely clean hands, so to speak, in the situation, where this board and prior boards have given the person some relief, perhaps not everything that they wanted. My point here is that while I feel fully justified in defending the district if you were to flat out reject this claim, because I think it is a rejectable claim, if the board took a different view and wanted to provide some relief due to the unusual circumstances that occurred here, I would certainly understand that. I wouldn't tell you that you were completely out of bounds, because ultimately you have to decide the merits of the claim. It's not my decision, it's your decision.
Okay.
One paid their sewer and water connection fees without a building permit. Actually, I think they were, the only special thing they got was a warning letter saying that there was going to be a 1,000% increase in the front footage fees 2 weeks before it was to happen. So that developer was allowed to pay for the front footage fees plus the sewer and water connections for the 12 building permits that he had. So it's a mixture of what happens here. Normal increases over the years are normally 10%. I mean, it's not much over the years, so 1,000% was a big deal. Special arrangements to accommodate me. Yeah, I think the district had to do that. Otherwise, I would not be able to continue my development, and it could have made the district liable because I wouldn't have been able to install those things. So I think the district kind of had to do that. And I want to say that the district does have discretionary authority over subdivisions. You have to have a final will serve letter from the district before they will record a map. And that final will serve letter has to say, and this is by county health department, that all sewer and water improvements have been built and are immediately available to service the parcels. And that's the county health department, that's what they want. And that's Lori Sallow at the county health department. The fire safety letter is a requirement before, that has to be issued before you can record a map. So fire roads have to be in, they have to be approved by the district. And fire roads, as you know, on my development were a big problem. They stopped me for 3.5 years because the roads were so large. The road requirements are so large. I did check with the sewer treatment people. I do not require a building permit to pay sewer fees. I wish I had known that sooner, and then I could have paid my sewer fees and come and paid my water fees. But I didn't know. There's a lot of things I have been learning. There's a lot of things that need to be made much clearer. And I do admit, and council admits, to ambiguous codes. Yeah, when they say to pay all your fees, I expected sewer and water fees.
I believe Ms. Dean asked to do what they told her to do. And then now I'm hearing, oh, I would have done something different. So I have a hard time with that. You know, again, because I do remember a statement or a letter from you saying you wish you would have had the opportunity, and then the next time it was, I would have done this. And I, you know, like,
I understand.
I just have a real hard time with it.
I was told that I had to have a building permit before I could put my sewer and water, pay my sewer and water fees. That was what I was told. I did not know that other subdivisions pay theirs up front. I'm new to that process. I don't think I'll ever do it again. And it's something when, you know, you're told, you think, okay, well, then I can't do that. Then how do I even get this one house up and going? And how do I put in my infrastructure? So I went on the basis that I needed a building permit. I do not think, and it seems like others can pay without a building permit. They can pay any portion of their fees and the building permit portions also. So it seems like I haven't checked any further, but I will be coming to check further in the district records. So I believed what I was told, and I didn't look further. And I was happy that I could even put in my 1 meter and my infrastructure, because I was told I could not do it without a building permit. There's no way I'd get a building permit on a parcel map. You don't get it till it's recorded. There's just, you don't get to do building permits on a parcel map until it's a recorded document. It puts you in a very sticky situation.
Other comment or questions? Again, it seems to me that in this case, the district apparently made an effort, significantly different set of circumstances that council was referring to. So again, I'm given the staff report and all of the sum total of the regulations and so forth, which are quite a bit to wade through. But in some cases, I think it has to be that way. And regulations generally can't, there's always going to be a knife edge one way or the other. Regulations can't address every situation. Otherwise, there wouldn't be enough regulations to deal with water and sewer to fill this room. So some discretion, I think, on the part of staff is necessary. And it appears that in this case, that was agreeable to all the parties involved. So I'm, again, having real trouble trying to go back and second guess what apparently was an acceptable situation at the time. So while I, again, have some sympathy with the complexity of the situation and your perhaps unfamiliarity with parcel maps and all of that, and there is a situation that residents of the county that are not in an incorporated city deal with, which is they deal with regulations of a community services district and then they deal with the regulations of the county, and those can put people in it's not one-stop shopping. You have to go back and forth to get everything approved. Years ago, I had a house built in the Pomo, and I came up against the same sort of thing, where you have to go to the county, and then the CSD, and then the county, and it's like a bouncing ball process. So while I understand that, I don't think that your situation is unique. And as a result, again, I'm going to not be able to support your claim. So is there any other staff comment on it? Or, I'm sorry, board comment? With that, then, I'd look for a motion. And I'll go ahead.
I know communication's been difficult and frustrating on both sides of this issue, and in all fairness, I'm not willing to totally dismiss this, so I'm going to vote no.
Okay, a tied vote is a lost motion. So in this case, the board has taken no action on the claim. Is there another motion? I'll ask again, is there another motion to proceed? If there's no motion to proceed, then presumably the claim would be denied administratively, and then the statute of limitations is increased. Is that
stated slightly differently? Upon expiration of the 45-day period on April 3rd, it's deemed denied, Okay. And the statute of limitations within which the claimants could file an action if she chose to is somewhat longer than under the other circumstances.
Under those circumstances, what I think I'll do is I'll attempt a motion here, and that I'll move that the that we seek a compromise in this situation.
Could you repeat? I couldn't understand.
That we seek a compromise. It's part of option number 4.
I'll second that.
Could you state the motion a little clearer, please?
Just that
speaking to that process that we're proposing.
Speaking to that particular issue, while such a motion is certainly one that can be made, seconded, and approved if the board chooses to, the motion as made puts the staff in a relatively untenable position because you have to give us some sort of authority. You either have to give the staff complete authority to settle it for whatever staff thinks is appropriate, which might result in a settlement or no settlement, who knows, or you need to give us here in a public meeting after a full discussion, which I usually recommend against, and reach some decision, give us some settlement authority, a specific dollar amount of settlement authority. And doing that in a public forum is always difficult. I wouldn't say it can't be done, but it is difficult. April 3rd is next Thursday, I think it is. There could be some special meetings called and, you know, closed sessions and discussion about what that authority might be, or staff might go and try and reach a compromise with the claimant and then come back at a special meeting sometime between now and April 3rd. All of those things are possibilities. But if a resolution, a final resolution, is not reached by April 3rd, the claim is deemed denied. Now, the implication of that is only the statute of limitations issue that I've discussed. It is not unusual, and I'm thinking more in the nature of, say, a typical personal injury case, relatively small personal injury case, for a claim to be denied and then a settlement get negotiated, oftentimes very soon after the time period, because 45 days often is just not enough time to be able to get things done. A settlement is achieved and it comes back and you have a closed session meeting about what all the facts and circumstances are in the terms of the settlement, and you reach your resolution.
So the mere fact that we go past the 45 days only has implications with regard to the statute of limitations.
Here we can maybe come up with something that would be suitable for the whole community.
Isn't there a motion on the floor?
There is a motion and a second. Yeah, we were attempting to clarify it, and there was a question. But you're right, there is a motion and a second.
So I think that to clarify my motion, the motion would be that, for me, I think the best is that the staff work on what with the claimant, what they feel is appropriate here, and give them the authority to do that.
Up to the amount of the claim?
I guess if the board were to adopt your motion, the view I would take as legal counsel is that what you've told us is you want us to go and try and negotiate a settlement. You're not setting any sort of parameters on what that settlement might be. We might work out a settlement in good faith and come back, and you might accept it or you might reject it. And I can do that if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. And I don't want, and I'm not, and I don't think that it should require that a settlement has to be made by staff either. It's just that they go in and they try to make one. Because if they can't settle on what they, if staff can't settle on what they feel is appropriate, or in all fairness, then that's also understandable. I think that's where I'm.
I will stay with my second in behind Vern.
Okay, is there public comment on the new motion? Hearing none, may I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
No.
President Hill?
No. So the motion fails as a tied vote. The motion fails.
Well, I didn't expect to even have a compromise or a settlement even proposed. It would. I think make me feel a little better about this district and how it operates. I think it might make the community feel a little bit better. I think the whole point in this was to get the ordinances changed. And I really do want to have a dispassionate opinion of what's going on and how we're operating here. If you're at a headlock here, what it means is it just runs out. And it's a rejected claim. It's not rejected here, but it's a rejected claim at April 3rd.
Do you want to take another 5-minute break?
There's ways to do this. If you do it on a percentage, maybe line something out on a percentage, but At the same point, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Okay, we'll recess for 5 minutes. That'll put us at about 8:25 by the clock. Again, we'll ask if there's a motion to proceed. Okay, hearing none. The board takes no action on this item, and we will move on to the next item. Uh, 7D should be a fairly quick one. This is a consideration of an amendment with the agreement to the San Luis Obispo County for Community Development Block Grant Funds for repair and replacement of damaged sewers.
Mr. President, members of the board, on February the 15th, 2007, the district entered into an agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo for the repair and replacement of damaged sewer pipelines in Oceano in the amount of $322,126 in community development block grants. The manager of this project for the county is Morgan Terrell. She has requested, or she has stated, the need to revise the original agreement to replace the word repair with the word reconstruct. And she's provided an agreement or an amendment number one to the original agreement, which is attached to the staff report. There are four places in the agreement that need to be changed, and staff recommends that we approve the amendment so we can proceed with the expenditure of those CDBG funds.
Okay, thank you. Comment or questions on the staff report? Hearing none, any public comment?
Sorry, I thought Barbara would have one first, so I was waiting. Okay, yeah, just one question real quick. The fact that repairs is being replaced, will this deny or have any legal effect as far as denying any repairs that are needed when they're putting replacement in? Is there anything? Is there anything in the legal termination with the change from repair to reconstruct cause us to lose any funding that could be considered repairs and not reconstruction? Or is there, or is this just going to give us additional?
You know, I'll have to defer to the general manager on that. I've not interfaced.
My understanding is that the way that the CDBG funds are stipulated.
I move that we approve amendment number one to the agreement between the County of San Luis Obispo and the Oceano Community Services District for repair and replacement of the damaged sewer lines or sewers in Oceano using community block grant funds.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve agreement number one to the agreement between the County of San Luis Obispo and OCSD. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Excuse me, is it agreement or amendment?
It's an amendment number one to the agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President, or I'm sorry, Director Dean, she's back.
Yes.
Vice President Bacow?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Administrative items, I'd like to take item 8B out of order at this time. This is a consideration of a request, actually probably by myself, going back to the last board meeting in the minutes, item 13, of consideration of assignment to a step in the plan of payment and compensation for Fire Captain Angelo higher than what was originally proposed by the general manager. And there is a staff report on this that essentially concludes, I believe, that the step should be 2107, which is less than the other captains are making, but is more of an advance. I think the original, there was some concern that the original amount that was proposed would have resulted in a net reduction in compensation, which didn't seem to me to be equitable or appropriate. So that is the item. Is there any?
I'd just like to say that I've discussed this with Captain Angelo, and the 2107 is about a 1.8% increase over the pay that he was getting without a class pay as a fire captain, and we've agreed that this is a reasonable place to start, and as soon as he's fulfilling the his full share of the captain responsibilities, then I've agreed that I will move him up to the top.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Comment or questions from the public on this item? Okay, with that, I would make the motion then that Captain Angelo be instituted at the salary level of $21.07.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
President Hill.
Yes.
Vice President Bookout.
Yes.
Director Mann.
Yes.
Director Dahl.
Yes.
Director Dean.
Yes.
Okay, it passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Item number 8A, this is a discussion of Employee Relations Consortium, consideration of the General Manager's recommendation for the district to join the Central Coast chapter of the Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore Consortium. Patrick?
Mr. President, members of the board, most public agencies have some sort of human resources consultant. A lot of them have HR directors or personnel directors or somebody that's very familiar with HR policies, because HR policies are very complex and critical to the proper performance of an operation. We don't have that kind of expertise here, and I'm not an HR professional. What I have found is that over the past month, a number of issues have come up where I needed to refer or ask questions of an HR professional. In one case, we hired a consultant for the employer-employees relations policy. In other cases, I've called HR directors that I know for cities and special districts. In other cases, I've consulted with Alex. Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore provides a service where they have, LCW is one of the premier public agency law firms in the state. They have these consortiums throughout the state. The regional, the Central Coast one has about 35 members. In total, in all of their consortiums, there are over 400 public agencies that belong to these consortiums. They do three things, really. They provide training in the form of quarterly training sessions where people can attend the sessions and get very good HR training. It can be directors, it can be senior staff, it can also be just run-of-the-mill workers. They do things like harassment training, that sort of stuff, for everybody. The second thing they do is they have a monthly newsletter, which consult with one of our employees. If something's reported to me and I'm not sure how to respond to it, I call them. And my experience, I've used this firm and three other public agencies where I worked, and my experience is that every time I call, they have the answer. It's authoritative answer, and it keeps the district from getting in trouble. And the cost of about $3,200 a year is minimal. The cost for this current fiscal year would only be $800 because we're coming in the last quarter of the fiscal year. But it would be very beneficial to me as a staff member if I had this kind of consulting capability available.
Does the California Special Districts Association that we belong to, the state one, offer these kinds of services also?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't checked it, but I'm not aware of that.
Who else are members of the consortium in this area?
Just about everybody around here. All the cities are members. I'd have to look at it. I don't have the list.
Okay.
I know all the cities are.
Okay.
In a prior life as a city attorney for one of the other cities here, we had access to it, and it was a very valuable tool.
Well, they've been very active, you know, when we've gone for training at the training, you know, seminars I've been to. I've seen them, and they look very professional, and they represent themselves real well from seeing that. I give them a recommendation.
Would it make a difference to staff whether this happens at this meeting or in 2 weeks or at the next meeting?
It would, but I mean, I've lived with it, lived without them for 8 months. I could go another 2 weeks, but I have questions I could ask them tomorrow if you authorize me to do that.
Okay, and if we join for the remainder of the year, does that require us to join for the following year?
No, it's year to year, and they'll send us an invoice for the following year, and you have to prove it as a warrant, just like you would do this.
So it looks like you have the opportunity for an $800 trial period for 3 months.
Yeah.
The thing we don't get to do, when you join late, you don't have input into the training session. Many people can go because we have to man the office. But if it's applicable to us, certainly I'd try to get somebody to it.
Bill noted, I think, also that they have ethics training and the Brown Act training that is required of.
So does our CSD.
So does CSDA. That point's well taken.
And like I said, they've got like 50 or 75 classes, and those are some of them, but the whole group has to decide they want that training. We can't choose the training that we want.
I would be in favor of getting this resource on board as soon as possible. You can't be an expert in everything, and you have to go to the people that are. And when you need them, you need them. Right. And so I would make a motion. Actually, I can't do it yet. We have to have a public comment.
Yes, is there public comment on this item? Hearing none?
Now I can make the motion.
I
would move that we authorize the general manager to apply for district membership in the Central Coast Consortium of Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we join the consortium as recommended by the staff report. Roll call, please, Patrick. Mm-hmm.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
No.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, a motion passes. Brings us to item number 8C, consideration of district legal counsel retainer agreement renewal and codification of district ordinances and resolutions.
Mr. President, members of the board, the district was unsuccessful in getting a qualified firm to codify our ordinances and resolutions. Since there is substantial legal work involved in this process, I asked our district legal counsel if his firm could do the work, and he said they do have the capability to do it. He even said they could do the work using banked hours we now have available if we could negotiate a new retainer agreement with him. It has been 3 years. The existing retainer agreement was adopted in July of 2005. It set a fee of 2008. At the present time, Kirk and Seamus bills private clients $305 per hour for Counselor Seamus's service, $200 per hour for most associate hours, and $135 per hour for most law clerks and paralegals. Counselor Seamus has proposed that we update the agreement, increasing the monthly rate to $4,000, while leaving the base blended hourly commitment to 20 hours per month, effectively resulting in a $200 per hour rate. His proposal includes keeping a two-year maximum on banked hours, but deferring expiration of any currently banked hours until the end of September so that the codification project can proceed and likely use up many of those banked hours. His proposal also includes increasing involvement of his associate, Ryan Fothergill, who is here tonight, in the legal representation of the district.
Before we go on, is this, Alex, is this something I need to recuse myself on? I like you. I don't have a problem with it, but I need to know if I need to accuse myself.
Well, I know that issue was raised in connection with General Manager Cooney's employment during his last days here, and I understand a fair argument can be made in that regard. I frankly am not worried about it, regardless how the vote goes. I'm not worried about you voting your conscience. But it's not me that gets to decide whether you violated the conflict of interest rules. It's the Fair Political Practices Commission. And because I am charged with managing the district's litigation and to a certain extent supervise Mr. Daner, who's the attorney representing the district in the litigation, probably the safest course of action is for you to recuse yourself.
And leave the room?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, I'm going to recuse myself and leave the room.
Don't go too far.
Of course, he asked me for my opinion about whether there's a conflict. So
you can recuse yourself, yeah, Alex. Exactly.
District staff recommends that the board direct staff and Mr. Seamus to come back at a subsequent meeting.
This arrangement, and I might be guessing it wrong, but I believe we should be able to get the codification project done within the banked hours that we have. There was a fair amount of work this month, and so some of the banked hours got used up a little bit, but I still am confident that we're going to be fine. And I might just note for the record that it was the esteemed retired director, Angelo, that I think first proposed the banked hours arrangement at the end of my first year, because it was actually intended to go the other way. I take it back. It was intended to go this way because there were at least a few months during the first year where the district didn't use all of its hours. So in some sense, it was kind of a wasted situation. And so he proposed the banked hours arrangement at the end of the first year, and I think it's served the district well over time, over the long haul.
Well, compared to other public agencies I've worked for, the district is prudent in its use of its attorney. A lot of public agencies call the attorney for everything, and we try not to do that here.
I think we kind of had our motion, didn't we?
pretty close. Let's see if there's any comment from the public on this item. Hearing none, come back and look for a motion.
A motion for the general manager and legal counsel to prepare Alex, help me out.
Oh, a contract for legal services.
Yes, the contract for legal services. Need a second?
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we direct staff to come back with a formal contract proposal for legal services. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes.
Item number 8D.
Maybe we should let Bill know.
Bill.
Yes.
Thank you. Form to be used by Board of Directors to evaluate the performance of the General Manager from, in general, August 2007 through March 2008, although it wouldn't necessarily be limited to that. It could be used in general. Is there a staff report on the item, Patrick?
There is, yeah. President Hill directed that the attached draft form be distributed for review by the Board of Directors. He proposes that directors review the form at the next regular meeting of the Board and develop a consensus form for use in evaluating the performance of the General Manager. Once a consensus form is adopted, President Hill proposes that the agreed-upon form be completed by all directors and the General Manager and sent to District Legal Counsel for compilation of the results and presentation at the following Board and Board meeting in closed session.
Was this something that was discussed in the Personnel Committee?
No.
Isn't this something that should have been talked about? Where did this form come from?
President Hill provided the form.
What I did is I took a form that LAFCO uses to try to get an objective review of performance and of their general manager. And the LAFCO form is not appropriate, obviously, for OCSD because the responsibilities and so forth of LAFCO vice OCSD are considerably different. But there are some things that are analogous to that, and these are some items that I thought were potentially worthwhile measurement metrics that could be used for an objective consideration of general manager performance. And I wanted to bring this forward as just a straw man, effectively, such that everyone could take a look at it, suggest this is a, I only propose this for as a basis for starting discussion, such that board members could comment, add, delete, make whatever changes seem to be appropriate.
This is something I look at, you know, probably should have been done in the Personnel Committee. I asked, when I saw this come on the agenda, I asked to see the general manager's employment agreement, and he's not up for any reviews until quite down the road. And
maybe I could weigh in on that. Completed, at least, within the month of June. And In this occasion, since it is the first time through with this general manager, and since I don't think a formal performance evaluation form has been done in at least a few years of the general managers, certainly spending a few weeks or a month or however long reviewing a form, making sure you have a form that everybody is comfortable with, and then getting started in the formal review process, you know, getting all that done over, say, the next 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and then getting started on the formal review process, perhaps in early or mid-May, so that you could complete in June, is not unreasonable at all. And with all of that said, the board has the right to review its employees at any time. So if you wanted to accelerate the process a little bit and do it a little bit earlier, you certainly have that authority as well.
Well, I looked at this and I don't like it at all. I think it's a, you know, it's in contradiction to our agreement with the general manager. This agreement with the general manager is a June evaluation. And the evaluation needs to be done in June and not brought beforehand. And anything that happens according to the contract, his contract states that his evaluation is in June of each year. Furthermore, the contract states that the specific criteria used to evaluate the general manager be developed by the board as a whole and the general manager together. It does not state that a portion of the board shall develop the criteria and dictate to the rest of the board what criteria shall be used. It needs to be a meeting together. And with that, I'm going to move that this item be dismissed and that no form of this be brought back to the board outside of the criteria established in the contract with the general manager in Section 10A. And I would further say that if we're going to, that we can start early to develop the criteria. but and that needs to be done as with the general manager and the board as a whole in a session, either a regular session or a special session. But that's what our general, that's what our contract with him reads, and so that's what my motion would be.
I don't care what kind of form you use.
Okay.
You know, take any.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
Okay, call a question.
How about some discussion?
Well, I think that if there's a discussion once wanted after the question is called, then we have to decide on the on whether the question can be called or not by vote, right?
Oh, for God's sake.
Well, I mean, isn't that the case?
Okay.
Well, it is unusual order to call the question immediately after the second. The normal order would be to have discussion by the board and to have public comment before you call the question. Now, it is true that under Robert's Rules of Order, upon calling the question, you would normally take the vote. But I just have to tell you, I don't think it's appropriate in this case, and you have to have public comment.
Yeah, I thought it was after public, you know, once the question was called, if there's no public comment, then public comment would be taken, and then you went from there. But that's fine. I just don't think it's appropriate talking about this. I think it's outside the contract that we have with the general manager. That this is to be developed with, according to our contract, it's to be developed between the board as a whole and the general manager. And to discuss this otherwise, I think is a conflict of our agreement with our contract with the general manager, and puts us in liability.
Well, since you referenced liability, I have to respectfully disagree. Certainly, if the board were to take action and immediately initiate an evaluation, there could be some argument made about whether the contract has been violated, and by undertaking the evaluation early. On balance, I think that would be incorrect, but at least an argument could be made. But with regard to item one, bringing a draft form to be reviewed by the board as a whole with the district manager here as a basis for starting the discussion about what is the criteria for evaluation seems absolutely, completely, utterly appropriate. The end product that might arise out of that might be a very, very, very different animal than this document, and it might take you several meetings, or you might refer it to committee, you might do any number of things on it. But to at least start the single letter on the form if you want to. You have to have some place to start. Unless you want to put a blank piece of paper up on the wall and start with that.
Can I say something now?
I think that probably would be more appropriate.
Can I say something now? Why doesn't everybody come in with their own form, and there's six of us, and then we take it and take the best of all of it? I mean, you start with something. I can remember, and Vern, you were on the board long enough to remember, how when we tried to have evaluations of the general manager and we had no form, and it would end up, well, gee, do this or don't do that, and this is how we're going to evaluate you next year. You were sitting there. You should remember that. And I also think that this board used to call the general manager in for a evaluation every month for a while, if you'll remember that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure his contract probably said the same thing. You know, nobody's saying that an evaluation's being done now. This is a form to start. And there might be things on here I don't like. There might be things, you know, Pamela might want something different. Maybe she's going to bring the evaluation that they do on her at work and use that form. I don't know what they use on you. You know, I'm sure they have some form.
Most, well, they definitely do.
Yeah.
And it's a rated evaluation.
Yeah, and you take some of the best things of that. I'm sure you don't like all of it. Nobody likes everything on their evaluation. Jim probably has one. I used to have one. I don't, you know, where you worked, whether they did or not, whether it was informal or not, but you have to start someplace.
Right, and we start all at the same place, not with any predetermined starting point from one or more members of the board. We all start fresh together.
Well, you might want to review the job description and the key activities and those kinds of things and relate them to that. Because we have, I think, a very good job description. So, and it will probably take a while. Everything takes a while. So if we need to start in working on that, I suggest we start in working on that together then. Bring it so we're working toward June, if that would be okay.
Well, you've got a motion and a second, and you're in discussion now.
And
then you've got to take public comment.
Right.
Any development of criteria for establishing the criteria to evaluate the general manager be created by the board as a whole and the general manager together, as stated in 10A.
You didn't have a date on there. You weren't saying.
Well,
were you saying you had to wait till June to start to make your form?
No.
Okay, that's what I'm. I
said the evaluation has to wait until June.
Right. Not preparing the form, correct?
Yeah, and that the form needs to be prepared by the five of us
that's
along
fine.
With the general
that's
manager.
That's fine.
Okay, the
motion. I'll even second your motion.
It's already seconded.
The motion
well,
having been
it.
Restated, then could we have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Right. Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes.
Now, can I make a motion? I move that we have a special meeting next Thursday to start preparing a evaluation form to be completed in June, but to start to prepare it for the general manager.
Second. Discussion from the board?
That is a waste of district money. And I don't see any reason to waste the community's money on a special meeting that's going to cost the district a lot of money like that.
Well, I think
I find it very irresponsible to spend the residents of Oceano's money just for a special meeting like you just asked for.
Well, I think your person to my your fellow board member suggested a special meeting to make this form. Did you not, Vern?
I suggested that it either be done in a special meeting or that it and it can be done also that it can either be done in a special meeting or at the regular board meeting.
Well,
if that's
just,
the case.
You said special meeting. I just followed your suggestion.
It would be much better to do this on a regular board meeting. That would cost Barbara, the district, probably about $2,000.
I withdraw my motion.
I just make a point of order. You don't need to make that a motion. You just need to direct me to do it, and it will be done. That's district policy is if a director asks for something to put on an agenda, I do it.
I'm asking.
Okay. It's done.
Thank you.
Would you like the second? In that case, I'll second the motion.
So are we back to a motion now or just direction to staff?
Direction to the staff. He wanted, so it's fine.
Direction to the staff? Okay.
We just saved the district of Oceano, the residents, $2,000.
I wish we could save them a lot more money.
Moving then to item 9, report of district representatives. I attended the fire committee meeting on March 18th. One of the topics discussed was upcoming fireworks, getting that on the committee agenda, and also the upcoming weed abatement process in time to have the annual weed abatement and fireworks issues
dealt with at the committee and the board level in time for those to be timely implemented down the line. I also attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting on March 19th. The action items there were purchase of a magnetic-based drill, PERS contract amendment agreement, long-range plan pre-design report by Kennedy Jenks. Kennedy Jenks is the original designer of the plant and has been involved in upgrade of the plant. What the discussion of the long-range plan is about is providing backup, final clarifier, and aeration tank that would allow the portions of the sanitation district plant as it's currently constructed has really no backup process. And they're looking ahead that regulations are being tightened all the time, and it may be necessary to take a certain piece of equipment at the plant out of service for a period of time. And in order for that to happen, there would have to be a parallel, so that's what was discussed, was just a pre-design report before that moved forward. And the airport acquisition update, the staff council advised that the piece of property at the end of the airport that has been in contention between the sanitation district and the county has finally been, they got approval from the FAA to transfer that, and it was just a matter of signature and opening the escrow account at the discretion of the county for that to move forward. It was also clarified that in the event of a spill, that the notification has to be made to the State Office of Emergency Services. There was some ambiguity on that, whether it had to be made to the county OES or the state OES, and the determination was that the state has to be notified, although the board was unanimous in recommending that the county also be notified immediately if anything like that were to happen. So that is the sanitation district. I also attended the personnel committee meeting. I'll leave that discussion for Director Dean. Bill?
I have nothing.
Okay, Fern?
Yeah, I've been a busy 2 weeks. We had two Oceano Advisory Council meetings, one on the 17th and one on the 24th. And at those two meetings, we looked at a couple of projects that are going on in the community. The state parks is wanting to install a new parking lot, chain link fence around it, solar lighting, and using a crushed granite road base so there's no drainage issues that still soak into the ground. And a little metal storage building out in the rest of their building area. And this was approved unanimously, or supported unanimously, by the council, in that it's going to be a nice addition over there. They need some extra parking for the employees, which will free up some parking for the public to be able to park out in that area and go through the trails and walk through the trails that are behind the state park building. And the other one is a six-unit little PUD tract on the southeast corner of, and there was an update on the cell site study session that was at the Planning Commission on February 28th, and basically what the Planning Commission is suggesting to the supervisors on cell sites within the county is that a moratorium be put on them until they can work out what kind of effects they have in the community and a few other issues. And coming up is advisory council training on April 19th for people that are on advisory councils are able to attend this and get some training as to how to be more effective on the councils. And that was the highlights of that meeting. And then there were two Zone 11A meetings that took place this month. One was on March 17th, the other on March 18th. The one on 17th was a task force. that met in San Luis, and the advisory committee task force, they went over the scope of work cost estimates prepared by the Morrow Group. It was tweaked a little bit, mostly for the dates that things are to happen. There were also a few clarifications that were made. The overall time that it will take to accomplish the desired task has been shortened from what it originally was. They have been able to shorten the time that it takes mainly because of the county being willing to supply the money up front instead of waiting until it is collected in the property tax. By shortening this time, it will actually reduce the cost of the project a bit. And then at the regular Zone 11A advisory meeting met last March 18th. The vacant position that I reported on at the last meeting has been filled. Charlie Lackey was appointed by the Board of Supervisors to fill that position. Any alternate positions have not been decided on and will have to go to the back to the board. On March 11th, there was a vegetation assessment on the channel done and different options brought to the committee for maintenance work to be performed in the channel this year. The committee agreed that there would be a full vegetation management of the channel this year. It would start as close to the mouth of the creek as they are allowed to go and work their way upstream from there. The actual physical work would be performed by the California Conservation Corps. While this thinning of the vegetation is going on in the channel, the permits require that a trained red-legged frog monitor be present at all 5 p.m. here in the Oceano Community Services boardroom. The Airport Land Use Commission meeting on March 19th was canceled, so there's nothing to report there. And that's all I have.
I had a question for Brad. Mm-hmm. Are they working on some grant funding for the environmental work?
Yeah.
The county environmental work?
There's grant funding working on. They're being worked on. Didn't hear back anything on any of that yet. Didn't expect to hear on it this meeting. Maybe in another meeting or two.
How much are they looking at?
I don't know what the figure is.
Okay.
But I know that some of the money is going to have to come out of the
county budget.
Property taxes collected.
Property
tax. So mm-hmm. You know, but the majority of it, I'm sure, is going to be grant money.
Okay. Good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pamela?
Well, the personnel committee kind of came to the board, so that was what we talked about. And the other meeting I attended was the Zone 3 meeting, and that was on the 20th. And I'll try to be brief. There's a lot that we do in that meeting, but with Lopez Recreation status, they have a new playground there. They're planting trout once a month, and they have new launch ramps. They also had a Cal Poly triathlon at the site. One thing that we discussed and didn't get into too much more was, other than a discussion, was the mussels that are invasive into some of the water channels and lakes and so forth, and how to keep them out. And there's not a very good way to do it, because boats can bring them in the bilge tanks and on the exteriors, and they're talking about maybe washing the boat's exteriors, but you still could get them in the bilge tanks of the boats that carries them, and they multiply tremendously fast. So they're working on letting the public know what causes this, and doing everything they can, and they haven't got an idea yet how to prevent those from coming in. It's going to be very difficult. The lake level itself is at 76%. They're making 4 point to be doing the clean in place on the filters, the monthly one, next week. They've got their staffing down to 16 hours per day, which is great, because it was 24 for a while and very expensive. They're working on possibly going to 12 hours per day and letting people work with their computers from home, so that they can control, give people some time off
They did say that there's a mental transition and that there are more smiles at the plant. I think people are feeling a little bit of relief there. The THMs, which are the trihalomethanes, are way down because of the way the plant is producing its water now. And everybody's pleased about how it's operating. The plant upgrade, our $26 million state low interest loan has to be paid out. All things have to be completed by June 30th of this year. So there are some remedial fixes they're working on. They're working on a cover for the DAF unit, pump replacement, and they still haven't done the 45-day membrane test. They have Kennedy Jenks working on it. Black and Beach are working on these things. They said they have 25 things they're working on, and they can't get them all done, but they're going to try the best to get most of it done. We talked about the budget. The maintenance budget has been the real big increase in the water budget. It's gone up 29%, and that's due to personnel operating and chemicals. That part, they're still going to be working on. Everybody is saying, well, you know, our communities have to pay for this. Can you tell us, can you give us an idea of when this we can begin to see some help for this? They said that they can't be sure that in this next year it will they'll work down with the number of hours that the employees have to work, but the chemicals are just something that they're going to have to go about slowly. So there is a declining trend in the maintenance and labor, but it was still way higher than we expected and than they expected. The interim downstream release schedule, they actually tried it at the end of January. So they took 1 week and they released the National Marine Fisheries Service about the habitat conservation plan and trying to speed it up and get something going so that they can get an answer to some of their proposals. So they sent that out February 27th to the main regional administrator. They haven't heard anything yet, but they proposed that their habitat conservation plan be commented on, that they keep having monthly meetings, and they set out a plan of action to complete this. It has been going very slowly, and we don't really have answers for what we need with the habitat conservation. The big thing that is we're going to do, or Zone 3 decided to do, is to release the recreation area at Lopez back to the county for operation. So the Lopez Dam recreation facility operation will come under General Services. They'll be taking that over. The Fluid Resources Management, who manages the wastewater treatment plant, will still be operating there. But they felt, and this is the task force and the zone people, felt that there are benefits to Zone 3 to relinquish control of the recreation area. And one of those is the responsibility for funding the management, maintenance, and operation will no longer belong to Zone 3. The County General Services Department will assume the full responsibility for the recreation area and become solely responsible for the finances. This allows District Public Works Department staff to operate and maintain only the Lopez Dam and Reservoir, and the overall operation of the recreation area under the authority of a single county department is anticipated to be more efficient, and it will eliminate the added demands to the limited district operation staff at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. There is one other thing that they have been looking at. It's called body contact water, which is what Lopez is. There is body contact with that water. And that was the reason the terminal reservoir was put into place, is to allow those pathogens to be affected by sunlight and diminish. They said with this new plant and their new membrane capacity, that terminal reservoir, they could still operate. So I think that's it.
Okay, comment or questions from the board on the staff reports?
I have a question. Pamela, I can't remember, did the operations of the Lopez recreation area, was that money, do you know if that was money making or money losing?
It barely makes it. It is not a big money maker. Okay. It is not it's balanced. So it's not going to be a big money maker.
Okay, because I always had thought that that any monies that came in from that probably should have went to the zone so it can reduce the cost of water, mm-hmm. as opposed to any profits coming from it going to the county yeah. as a whole. But
I think you lost that argument before when we tried it.
Yeah, I think that...
if you remember.
Yeah, I guess it's always gone to the county then, hasn't it? Yeah.
It's just they're saying that they don't make a lot of money on it. That's what they're saying.
It sounds very labor intensive.
Yeah. It is, and I hope they will be more efficient.
So is the division of labor then is Public Works would operate the dam and reservoir as a water supply and the water treatment plant, and then General Services operates the park aspects of it?
General Services, yeah, that's the split out. And the Fluid Resources Management operates the wastewater treatment plant at the park there.
Okay. Comment or questions from the public on the staff, on the director's reports?
Director Mann.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had a report.
Yes.
No, you already gave the fire report.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to add to that?
No.
Okay.
You did it just fine.
Okay, then item number 10, general manager items for discussion.
Patrick? Yeah, I have two items. The San Luis Obispo chapter of the CSDA has arranged to provide ethics training for public agency directors and council member on 25th, and so people can start preparing for that event.
Do we have a water bill that's going out before that time to put that on there?
I'll check. I don't know. But, yeah, it's a good idea. We'll do that, yeah.
The training in from the CSDA, is that that's a mandatory training for all directors?
That's correct.
Every, what, 2 years?
Every 2 years. Yeah. It's Assembly Bill 1234, believe it or not.
And can you check to see, I guess, which ones of us need to take that, or it's due to take
everybody.
That again?
Everybody. But the last training was, in essence, 2 years ago.
Okay.
So everybody needs to go.
All right.
You have to have it by December. So this is the best opportunity. If you absolutely couldn't do it, we could arrange to get it some other way.
I believe you could do it online.
You can do it online, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
You could probably call John Seitz and ask him about it, because he talked about it doing it online, mm-hmm. if you wanted to do it that way.
Okay.
Any comment or questions? Comment or questions from the public? Hearing none, item number 11, board member items for discussion. Start with Vern.
Go ahead, nothing.
I have a couple things. The CSDA training, I'll go to Avila.
Okay.
In the afternoon. On the check register, is there any way this can be printed a little bigger? This is really, really hard to read.
Yeah, we tried to print it larger. Gina knows how to do it. Administrative assistant knows how to do it on her computer, but Cindy and the rest of the staff couldn't figure it out. So hopefully, if Gina comes back before the next meeting, we'll try to figure it out.
Because otherwise, I'll be sending you a bill for the magnifying glass
right.
I'm going to need.
Yeah, we just couldn't figure it out.
And I noticed in the March 20th Friday report, you mentioned payroll people, the meeting with that. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, please?
Sure. I've actually contacted two different local payroll processing services. The idea is to send in the checks and doing year-end W-2s, pretty much the whole thing. We have to assemble the time cards, and we have to either distribute the checks or have them distributed into the pay accounts.
Who was the other company besides payroll?
I don't have it right off the top of my head. It was a company in San Luis Obispo. I forget.
Because I do believe at one time you and I discussed ADP.
I don't favor ADP. I've worked with them before. They're a large company. These are both local, very small firms.
I think the only comment I have to make about outsourcing this, mm-hmm. I'm not a big believer in outsourcing things that so many things, mm-hmm. but it ends up taking you almost as much time to prepare it and get it ready for them as, you know, probably about all you're saving is the printing and stuffing of the checks, because you're still doing all the work for them, because your system calculated it out as theirs. I kind of always question how much we really save in time. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
I'll comment on that. I use ADP in my business. It is one of the most efficient means and money saving things I have ever done. Mm. I am very impressed with the payroll service, and it just makes life so simple.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to have the computer reprogrammed every year for the new tax rates?
We don't basically we do. We have to put in the programmer comes in and puts in the new rates, yes.
Is that an expensive ordeal?
Not especially, no.
Good.
You know, she charges by the hour, and it's not that expensive.
Okay, Pamela, any discussion item?
No.
Bill?
Nope.
I have none either. This time, let's take a look at the warrants, item number 13.
I know there's a Kurt and Seamus in there.
There is one.
I'll need to recuse myself on the Kurt and Seamus.
I move that we pay Kurt and Seamus.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to pay the warrant from Kirk and Seamus. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 4-0 with one recused. On the other warrants, comment or questions on the other warrants?
We still have one in here for the former interim GM.
That's correct. He, Mr. Dowdy, when his time here was over, he started traveling and was gone extensively, and he just had the opportunity to finish his reimbursement account. And that, so this is all for stuff that was done last year.
Had we accrued that money?
No. We didn't know the amount of it. It's just for the public's information, it's $547 total amount.
And that was for a number of months?
It was for April, June, and July, different things done during those 3 months.
Yeah. Money well spent.
Okay. Comment or questions from the public on the warrants? Hearing none, motion?
Move that we pay the remaining warrants.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We pay the remaining warrants. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. At this point, I'd like to take a 5-minute recess. And we'll come back at 20 minutes till. Okay, we will resume. Next item on the agenda is an executive session.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. This is a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1 to consider a complaint regarding a public employee.
Okay. With that, then, we'll move to closed session. Okay, we're returning from the closed session, and counsel, if you...
Are they on?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, they are. Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, reporting on the closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1 to consider a complaint regarding a public employee. The board took no action except to continue the matter to its April 9th meeting at the request of the employee. That action was taken by a consensus of the board.